Tuesday, August 15th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that is the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
What a spotless introduction, Matt. It's great to be talking football. I know you're coming off a heavy workload this weekend. You've been grinding tape all weekend and, you know, in the studio, you know, away from all humanity. So let's do it, man. Let's give people the answer key at quarterback. They need it. You know, the game has shifted, right? It used to be the hook of fantasy is, oh, yeah, NFL all about the quarterback. Fantasy, not about the quarterback at all. And that is shifting, be it through format change and also just the way the position is scored and the way the position is played nowadays. So I feel like a lot of times we did the show in the past, people are like, oh yeah, quarterback got that. It's such an easy fix. No matter what you do, will work. I think we have to have conversations today that weren't relevant a few years ago.
Yeah, as Scott's alluding to, definitely working hard all weekend. I'll tell you what, my voice was getting a workout and my lack of sleep was getting a workout this weekend, that's for sure. But we do have a lot of important business to get to, as Scott is mentioning. We are continuing Strategy Week here on the podcast. Andy and I got off to a very, I'll say, unserious start on Strategy Week from our podcast on the Expo. But this is an important one. Today we're going to be talking about what we're just calling it, the quarterback evolution in fantasy football. We have a big conversation on that coming up later in the show. Scott and I have, we kind of like got started talking about this, I feel like, at the end of last regular season, Scott, and we're really going to put a bow on it and tie it all together here today. But before we do all that, let's talk some preseason week one action that we didn't get to from the Expo podcast with Andy. I'll go over some headlines and some playing time notes in this one. Let's start with the headlines. Colts head coach Shane Steichen, who I feel so bad for during this entire Jonathan Taylor versus Jim Irsay saga, but he basically said that he expects Jonathan Taylor to be back with the team next week. A couple of caveats with this, though, Scott. ESPN's Stephen Holder, who's been all over this story, noted that Taylor is expected back at Colts training camp this week, but first, a couple of notable points. Number one, Taylor's position has not changed. He still wants to be traded. And two, he has communicated to the team that he'll practice slash play only when he is 100%. I feel this was a notable update to provide, Scott, but I'm not sure that we've really made any ground here in the, as Jonathan Taylor's world turns saga here.
Unfortunately, Taylor doesn't have a lot of leverage for several reasons. One, the running back position has been de-emphasized and devalued just about league-wide. And that's why we're having conversations with McCaffrey's had statements on it. Your buddy Austin Eckler's talked about it. It's just really hard to get that second contract. It's really hard to get paid what you think is commensurate to what you're probably worth. It's nice that Jonathan Taylor wants to be traded. What team is screaming to prioritize running back? I don't know who that team is. Maybe if a team had a major injury, that could grease the runway for a trade. But also, it's not like the Colts. The Colts want to be good. But it's not like they're sitting on the precipice of a Super Bowl and, oh my God, if we don't have Jonathan Taylor here, our season goes kablooey. I mean, their upside is maybe squeaking in the playoffs. Steichen, they hope he's a long-term answer. They hope they just drafted their next 10-year quarterback in Richardson. But this is a year where they're trying to get moving in the right direction. It's kind of a transitional year. And I'm sure they're totally fine. The Colts, they want Taylor in camp. And they know he doesn't have a lot of leverage, but if he decides to sit out games, I think they're going to be fine with it. You throw in the Irsay factor, you really never know what he's going to do. I'd love it if they could make all the running backs happy. I love it when guys get second contracts. I love it when anybody in the league gets paid because they're taking their life and their livelihood in their own hands every snap. It's just the gravity of the game is so significant. But I think eventually Taylor will come back and play because he'll hear his biological clock ticking and he knows he has a very limited amount of time to make money in his profession.
Like, I think I alluded to this a few conversations about Jonathan Taylor ago, you know, a few episodes previous. And again, they're all starting to kind of run together at this point. But what I had heard coming out of the Colts kind of brass was that they don't want to give out any extensions right now. We just kind of gloss over the fact they remember how Scott Jeff Saturday was this team's head coach for so long. And I get that's an Irsay thing, right? Like Irsay is the one, I think, creating some of this disaster. Like, I think he has to hold that responsibility. But regardless, like, I don't think they're in a rush to give anyone, even Jonathan Taylor, who's probably been their best and most notable player the last few weeks, any extension. So to me, I just think like the only thing that's going to happen here is Jonathan Taylor, like, come in, have a big season. And I think he can actually have a really big season in this Colts infrastructure ecosystem because of the offensive line potentially getting better, the run scheme certainly getting better and fresher under Shane Steichen with Anthony Richardson there. So the table is set up for Jonathan Taylor to come in and have a nice year if he's healthy, number one, and if he wants to play for this team. Minor headline here, NFL Network's Mike Garofolo reports that Cardinals tight end Zach Ertz, quote, has been cleared for full football activity and is on track to play in week one. You know, Scott, part of me looks at some of these Cardinals guys like James Conner, set up for a ton of volume. Zach Ertz, maybe set up for a ton of volume. Michael Wilson, I think, is going to sneaky play a lot, the rookie wide receiver for this team. You know, Marquise Brown, certainly set up for a lot of volume. I didn't expect Zach Ertz to play in week one, but if he does, the role is certainly there for him. But how much should I care about any of this on the Cardinals offense?
Yeah, when our buddy Frank Schwab did his power rankings, which are NFL-based and not necessarily fantasy-tailored, although I did write a fantasy nugget for all of them, and Frank's a very good fantasy player. He had the Cardinals 32nd. And just a refresher to everybody out there, there's 32 NFL teams. That's dead last. This is obviously a rebuild. We don't know really the status of Murray right now. I don't want to draft. There's a time where I could take Connor, and I get it. He didn't make my all-boring team, but he could have. He's as boring as it gets. He's the total volume play, which at running back is the most important thing.
I read your all-boring team, Scott, and that was my biggest surprise that James Connor did not make the all-boring team.
For sure.
I feel like he's the poster child of it.
For sure. And I snuck in a couple of players who maybe aren't that boring. I'm getting a lot of pushback. Like, Nick Chubb's not boring, and I guess not. Although, when I see Bijan Robinson being drafted over Nick Chubb, I think that's all, well, Robinson's the shiny new toy and Chubb isn't. Connor would be somebody I could draft at the right price, at the right ADP, at the right round. But Zach Ertz, a tight end, he's not on the back nine. He's on the 17th or 18th. He's probably putting out right now. And I don't mean to be cavalier about somebody's career. He's had a really nice season. We had some fun times in Philadelphia, but Ertz, you know, it was Ertz so good before it was Hurts so good. But don't draft Zach Ertz. He's not on my board. And even if he's on my waiver wire and he catches six passes for 75 yards and a touchdown in week one, I probably won't pick him up. I don't think there's any ceiling whatsoever for him. And I want your second half of your draft in most formats. There are some deeper formats where floor actually matters in the later part of your draft. But for most leagues, in most formats, you're just looking for a guy who can break through and crash his ceiling. And I just don't see how Ertz can possibly do that.
I mean, to make a similar joke about the back nine of guys' career, Colt McCoy is probably going to start games for this team this year.
Sure, for sure.
And he's hosting a YouTube show with Josh Norris at Underdog Fantasy. Like, Josh McCown was on that show last year. Josh McCown is now the quarterback coach for the Carolina Panthers. Like, is that's where Colt McCoy is? By the way, great get by, you know, Josh and the boys there at Underdog. That should be a great show. It was a great show with Josh McCown last year. But, I mean, again, Colt McCoy might start 3, 4, 5 games for this team this year, and he's doing a YouTube show this year. Like, I mean, hey, I don't know. That seems a little inconspicuous.
You know what I got out of that is I didn't realize where Josh McCown has landed, because I think he's a future coordinator and probably a future head coach and a fascinating guy who kind of played with his hair on fire and made a lot of mistakes in his 20s and then became a little bit of a wise old owl in his 30s and played some really good football. He's kind of like the poor man's Ryan Fitzpatrick. He bounced around. He played for a lot of teams. He was somebody who, if you needed him to play in a pinch for a few weeks, maybe a month, maybe 6 weeks, you could probably do fine. He wasn't a long-term solution, but he's a really smart guy. What I took from that is I'm glad that McCown's in Carolina, where he gets to mentor a rookie quarterback, a number one overall pick, and Bryce Young, who we want to be one of the next stars at the position. I think he's in good hands with McCown.
I think McCown has a really good future in coaching. Remember, the Texans like tried to skip three steps and make him their head coach at one point, which was a little disgraceful, but I do think he has a really good future as a coach and very high on what he can do in Carolina. Scott, you must be playing the Immaculate Grid, the game, right?
For sure.
Football Reference.
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the skeleton key. He played for like nine teams.
So is Josh McCown. That's my first step. Like, okay, did Josh McCown play for this team? Did Ryan Fitzpatrick play for any of these teams? Okay, now we really start guessing. Like, now we really start playing the game. So yeah, I think McCown, though, great for the Immaculate Grid. I think it'll be great for the Carolina Panthers.
And isn't that the joy of that game? I'll just leave it at that. And again, the producers are probably screaming right now, but the joy is when you get the really low percentage guy. That's so much fun. Like, I remember the kicker once. You know, kicker is actually a really good Immaculate Grid. They bounce around too. So you have the right kicker, you can get a really good score. I think one time I came up with Errol Mann, who was a Raiders kicker, you know, back in the Stabler Casper days. He was my answer. And you know, nobody said that. So that set me up for success. Unfortunately, I didn't complete the grid. If you don't complete the grid, nobody cares about your score.
Yeah. It's a fun game. I love it. It's just like, hey, all of the things I don't remember from high school, college, all these things I, you know, learned all those years. But I do remember where some of these random NFL players played. So there is that. Okay, a few playing time notes from preseason week one, courtesy of Adam Levitan. And
so good.
Found it on Twitter. ETR established the run has a full, like, research team charting preseason games, which, I mean, my God. There's how you know the fantasy industry has exploded. We have a research team from ETR charting preseason games. We love to see it. What a great time to be alive. I picked out some ones that I think actually might matter. As we talked about with Andy, not everything from preseason matters, not everything certainly from a performance perspective, but even from some of these playing time things, they might not really matter. So Scott, I kind of want to heat check these with you. Do any of these matter? Number one, Tank Bigsby was on the field, according to ETR's research team, was on the field for just one of 12 snaps with Trevor Lawrence. But the key part of this here, that one snap came on third and one. The Jaguars starters didn't see any other short yardage situations. Running back snaps overall for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Travis Etienne, 9 snaps, ran 4 routes. Jamichael Hasty played 2 snaps, ran 2 routes. Tank Bigsby, just again, this one snap, didn't run any routes. Scott, there's been, like, anytime I check in on Twitter, you know, while I was traveling the last, you know, couple days, there's this, like, weird Tank Bigsby versus ETN, like, holy war going on in fantasy circles, even to the point when people are, like, literally arguing about who's bigger. I mean, give me a break. But, again, parts of the Twitter weekends, this has been brewing for a while, I think. We haven't really touched much on the backfield on this podcast because, no surprise, I've been talking so much about the receivers and Calvin Ridley. What do you think is going on here with Tank Bigsby, with Travis Etienne? How many of, like, what's kind of your draft plan with this backfield?
My pliable takeaway is just I'm not drafting Etienne because I'm not concerned. I'm not convinced that he'll be on the field and hurry up. I'm not convinced he'll be on the field and third down. I'm not convinced he'll get the easy touchdowns. So his ADP is very expectantly priced. He's an easy fade for me. Also, good to see Calvin Ridley wearing 00 is now allowed in the NFL. So he's wearing 0, but Swift is wearing 0 for the Eagles. I wonder if they'll bring back 00. Robert Parrish, Ken Burrow, stuff like that. Also, I love the name Tank, right? I mean, our good friend Tank Williams, part of the Yahoo family. Is he bigger than, who do you think is bigger, Tank Bigsby or Tank Williams? We'll have to figure that one out. But I'm not drafting ETN. That's my takeaway, because I'm not, at his price point, you need him to be a 3-down back. You need to feel good about him scoring 8 to 12 touchdowns. I don't feel good about that at all.
Yeah, I haven't really clicked on him much, which is weird because I think he is he's a good back. I think he's an explosive player, and he's on an offense that I really like. Like, I like clicking almost all these names here in Jacksonville. Ridley, I like where he goes. Shout out to Calvin Ridley, you know, his first snap back. He just gets absolutely worked in a blocking situation. That was like, oh, yeah, welcome. That was getting your feet back. That was knocking off the rust right there, doing a little blocking for Christian Kirk. But I have Travis Etienne kind of ranked and is a decent running back pick, but I just never really end up clicking him, which means I think maybe I need to rethink my ranking of him. But I don't have a take on Tank Bigsby, basically. But I think situationally, he might end up on the field more, and I agree with you that I think Travis Etienne's role is not set.
Yeah, I think those other two guys are going to obstruct for Etienne. I think Bigsby is strictly a handcuff. I don't think he's going to have standalone value or insurance back, whatever term you want to use. I saw somebody post on Twitter, and by the way, I'm so glad you're calling out Levitan and ETR. One thing, ETR is obviously great, but Levitan has such a fantastic BS detector. He is very good about condensing all the noise and saying, okay, there's a million things you hear that don't mean a thing. You need to care about, like, these 7 things. He's so good at that. I think he's maybe as good as anybody in the industry at that. So I saw somewhere on Twitter, I don't think it was Adam, though maybe it was, talking about Kirk maybe not being on the field for some of the 2 wide receiver sets and getting slot work when they had everybody on. So I know because you love Ridley so much, I got to figure Kirk's on your back burner anyway. But is it time to sound a little bit of an alarm about not drafting Christian Kirk?
I'm going to raise my eye at that a little bit for sure. Again, it's preseason week one. The one thing I think that I've talked about with the Jaguars a lot, that this offense could be highly concentrated, right? They could be one of these narrow usage trees from a passing perspective, because we clearly don't think they're going to be throwing to their starting running back very much. I don't think they're going to be throwing to any of their running backs very much. And I think Calvin Ridley can be an alpha target earner. I think Evan Ingram can have a good role. And then Kirk was like, I think Kirk could be kind of like Devontae Smith last year. It makes no sense from, like, a where they are in their career perspective, but just could end up being really highly targeted because he's a good player. And even though we're all obsessed with the number one receiver, again, he's a good player in the role that he plays. But Zay Jones could mess this all up, man. That's for sure, because Zay Jones had a nice season last year, and they really like Zay Jones. But overall, I think they'll still be an 11 personnel team. By and large, the vast majority of their saps will come in 11 personnel, and I don't have too much concern with Christian Kirk's playing time in those situations. This one, at least, is interesting to me, again, to talk about two receiver sets. Russell Wilson played 20 snaps in the game, dropped back 14 times. Mm-hmm. The tight end situation is where I want to focus this. The receivers were kind of as expected there. Tight end snaps. Adam Trautman, 15 snaps, 9 routes. Greg Dulcich, 10 snaps, 6 routes. Adam Trautman was pretty much the full-time player, was the rundown guy. He is a former Saint. They did quietly trade for him. Obviously got some connection there with Sean Payton. Scott, we just talked about Greg Dulcich breakout odds last week.
We had a podcast devoted to Greg Dulcich. Let's just own it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they clipped that for social. They put that out there like, "Oh, Greg Dulcich, you know, is this the season?" I even said like, "Oh, maybe he could lead the team in targets if these receivers don't stay healthy, if they disappoint or whatever." Well, shoot, he might not even lead the tight end position in snaps. Are we overreacting to this? Because I will say it made me a little nervous for a guy that I think was set up pretty well to have a nice year.
My feeling about all this stuff we talk about is that if you reacted to nothing in the summer, in the spring, in the exhibition season, other than major injuries, of course, which you have to do something, you'd probably be better off than micromanaging this whole batch of games. That said, when I saw this news, I felt I had to take Dulcich down, I don't know, 3 spots or so. He's gone from a green light to a yellow light to me.
Yeah, part of my skepticism is that I'm ready to dramatically adjust my expectations to any Denver Broncos player on offense specifically, because
it's a new regime. It's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't underestimate the fact that they traded for a guy who has Sean Payton experience. That means something. Even if they just won the block, the point is he's on the field and Dulcich isn't.
The guys that they have acquired since Sean Payton has gotten there, 2 former Saints, Adam Trautman, Marquez Callaway, who's probably, you know, the leading candidate to be the third receiver, although Marvin Mims, another guy they acquired, I think could take that job at some point. And they acquired Samaje Perine in the backfield, right? Like, everybody else, I think, is pretty much on notice with Sean Payton, and you need to either, you know, get on the bus and you need to play really well, or you're not going to be here. And obviously, that includes Russell Wilson. I should mention they did acquire Jarrett Stidham, of course, who, you know, there's a better than 0% chance for sure that he plays games this year. So I'm definitely raising my eyebrow at this, and I don't know if I'm taking Greg Dulcich down in my rankings. Just, I mean, I did have him rather highly ranked. It's just tight end is so murky, but yeah, I'm definitely.
I know you don't want to wash your hands of a take that you were convicted on. I get it, and I actually respect that. We also have to note from this game, the offense. Frank Schwab wrote about this. The offense played so poorly on the first couple of series that they played a little bit longer than it looked like they might have originally, because Peyton wanted to have them do something good. And of course, the good thing that they ultimately did is they threw a 4th down touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy, a player that we don't agree on, which whatever, that those points will not count when your fantasy season starts. But I was nice to see Jeudy get going. And if you're wondering why Mims wasn't in the box score, he has a slight hamstring injury. So they held him out. We have to see what the usage is for Mims, because it's one of those things we talked a lot about. So often your stance on a player depends on the ancillary stuff on his offense, right? I mean, maybe you don't want Jerry Jeudy because you're Marvin Mims guy, or as much as I love Terry McLaurin, because I want to draft Jahan Dotson, I'm not drafting McLaurin because I'm keeping that slot available for Dotson later. No, unfortunately, my opponents get the draft. I just get sniped on Dotson in the league, which did not make me happy. I think he's going to be really good though. And you know, we love McLaurin, of course, but I want to see what this offense does when Mims plays, because that's going to affect how I feel about, and Sutton's an interesting guy too. They kind of soured on Sutton, but he's still here. He's had a good camp. So maybe Cortland Sutton is back. That's the other thing too. I mean, no matter how a team feels about a player, they try to trade him, they don't extend him, whatever. At the end of the day, if he's still on the field, opinions change, and they can ultimately, sometimes teams will say, oh, you know, the best trades you make are the trades you don't make, that you don't finish for whatever. A lot of times a team and a player don't look to be a fit now, and maybe they might be a fit 6 weeks from now. So the Broncos are certainly there are certain teams, you know, we already know who their people are, and they're not going to play a lot of their stars in preseason, and we're going to like almost ignore them completely. The Broncos are one of those teams. Quarterback who needs to be fixed, new head coach who's here, a lot of personnel in flux. When their first team's on the offense, we have to, not only would you watch what they do, I would even rewatch what they do if you have it available to you, because it's important to get this team right.
Yep. And for me, my answer this year has been, I was all out on Denver last year and really haven't been in on them this year like nobody has been a proactive draft pick for me on this team, really, except Greg Dulcich. And now I don't even think he can be put in that category either. So I'm not saying I'm not drafting Cortland Sutton or Marvin Mims if they fall to the right area and just like, okay, I like them better than the other guys on the board, but I'm not going into any draft being like, yeah, I got to get me Marvin Mims. Yeah, I got to get Cortland Sutton. I was sort of feeling that way about Greg Dulcich, and now even that is in flux. Everything in Denver remains in flux to me. Justin Fields in Chicago, he played 7 snaps. We already put out the Super Bowl parade for the Bears with Andy on Saturday for, you know, with a DJ Moore touchdown. But I do want to talk about this backfield, Scott, because we didn't mention that during Andy's, you know, victory lap, shirtless victory lap with the DJ Moore thing. But running back snaps, Khalil Herbert, 7, with Justin Fields, 7 snaps. Roshan Johnson did not play. Dont Foreman did not play. Levitan noted, I'm not ready to call this one yet because we often see incumbents, and we'll talk about that with another backfield here in a minute, get the nod in these spots. So maybe this is just, again, Herbert's the guy who's been there before. He's the starter right now. But he's a guy that could be a serious value if he does hold this backfield. Do you have any conviction, any like stance at all on the Bears backfield?
I made the joke after the Herbert touchdown was circling the former Twitter. I did a quote tweet and said that Mike Vrabel just cut 7 players from his defense because the competition level and the diagnose level on that play was so terrible. It was just like they said, okay, yeah, we'll allow a touchdown. I mean, it looked like they were point shaving. It was so bad. But Herbert, I think I have to reevaluate my Herbert take, which I was not at all ranking him proactively. And maybe he has a chance to be the main back here. And I took something from this. I did move Herbert up a few slots. I don't know if he's still in a spot where I'm likely to draft him all that much, but I think I was just looking at it as more of a muddled committee. And to be fair, I mean, a lot of people have made this point with running backs. When running backs are murky, when running back committees are nebulous, that's where the money is. That's where the profit is. Because if you get somebody to emerge from that, you've drafted them at such a modest cost, and then they can significantly outkick their ADP. So a lot of times, like people might say, and I kind of said a second ago, oh, you know, murky, I'm avoiding it. Sometimes it's more like, no, if I solve this murky, if somebody can win here, if somebody can push the other guys out of the way, that's how you, I don't want to say win your league, but significantly improve your chances to win your league. I'm starting to think Herbert might be that guy.
You know how these situations become unmurky, Scott? Is somebody's good. Is one of these backs is just better than these guys. And I do think Khalil Herbert, who's not a perfect player, he definitely has issues on passing downs. Ironically, like it's a big catch and run here that we're talking the highlight from that play, but he's had issues on passing downs. But I think he's a really good runner. I mean, I think Foreman has been a really good runner. I think Roshan Johnson could be the guy that plays on passing downs. But if Herbert is just a very, very good player, and like I feel like Chris Harris, specifically anytime I'm on his podcast, when we talk about like players who are better on film than they're better in fantasy, he always talks about Khalil Herbert, and we agree on this one. I think he has shown really nice potential in the NFL to be an explosive and high workload back in spurts, sort of like an Alexander Mattison type. But I think Herbert's even been more explosive. Like we've seen him in those moments when David Montgomery's been hurt. Like if that's how this committee gets solved. If Khalil Herbert is just that good, if he's that much better than everybody else, because if we're talking then like, okay, he could have Justin Fields being the Jalen Hurts of this year. So at least some people have some conviction there. Well, maybe Khalil Herbert could be the Miles Sanders of this year.
You mentioned Madison passing. Is he the most polarizing player you can think of this year? Where I feel like everybody I know really feels good about him and thinks he's a giveaway, or like, oh my God, he's not that good. They're trying to sign other people. I'll talk myself into his backups. Which fork in the road are you picking on Madison?
I like come right down the middle on this.
Really? Okay. Okay.
I don't have. No. Yeah. But I agree with you that anytime I see an Alexander Madison debate, like on Twitter, I'm kind of like, okay, what are we doing here? I don't think this guy needs to be that polarizing. Right now, he has a really great role seemingly locked up, but I would say that you can't be super convicted on if he's a good or bad player because he's done the one thing, again, in spurts that I think is a really good indicator of running back ability, is he's handled big workloads and he's been productive and done so on really good offenses and really good teams, which he could certainly do all year this year. But like, I don't really care about his missed tackle rates or any of that stuff. Like, again, we just haven't seen him play that much. So I really come right down the middle on Alexander Madison. I have him ranked in an area where I'm saying like, yeah, if he's on the board, like you should consider drafting him maybe even at or ahead of his ADP. I guess maybe that's where I stand on it.
Do you have shares?
Yeah, I've taken him. I've taken him in, okay. in spots. Yeah. So where do you think? Where do you come down?
I'm leaning towards he's just an average talent. And the only way you're going to make a profit on him is he has to be the guy all season and no backup can flash. They can't sign anybody. What makes me nervous, I feel like this is an unusual year where there's more high volume, high profile backups who aren't signed yet, or options who aren't signed yet. And I think eventually these guys are going to realize that there isn't huge money out there and they're going to take contracts. And I think this may be a 25 or 30% chance that Minnesota adds a back before the season starts. Not just a back that was cut by somebody, but like somebody who would be an immediate threat to Cook's playing time right away.
Yeah, they brought in Kareem Hunt,
to Madison's playing time, right? Yep. They brought in Hunt, didn't sign him. But who knows? That showed interest in doing something. That showed that our running back room isn't completely solved and tidy and we're set. And, you know, come in here. We'll work you out. And we'll buy you dinner. I'd be nervous if I was a Madison manager.
One last preseason playing time note here. Kenny Gainwell didn't play at all in the preseason. DeAndre Swift played. Rashad Penny played. The key thing here, as many people have pointed out, again, it's the incumbent player here. Kenny Gainwell was on the team last year. They certainly know who Kenny Gainwell is. They don't know who DeAndre Swift is. They don't know who Rashad Penny is. There's been a lot of buzz on Kenny Gainwell out of training camp that he might be the starting back for this team. He might be the running back one for this team. Some people have even thrown out feature back. I think that's maybe doing a little heavy lifting. Some others have suggested that, hey, and I'm sorry, I'm just saying like some people, but I'm like beat writers reading. I'm just a ton of stuff on it. Like Elliot Shores Park, Jimmy Kemsky, they've kind of contributed to some of the stuff I'm saying here. You know, like Trey Sermon and Rashad Penny have had like equal reps with the first team in training camp, right? Do you have a read on this backfield at all? Because I know people will, even Kemsky pointed it out, like people are going to take this, oh, Kenny Gainwell doesn't play in the preseason, and like bump Kenny Gainwell up rankings. I actually had Kenny Gainwell ranked in the same tier as DeAndre Swift anyways, because I think they have access to the same role, really. So my read is that if you're moving Kenny Gainwell up a ton, you shouldn't be doing it on this report. He kind of should have been there anyways, because I think he is going to be at the very least, a big part of this rotation. But where do you stand on Gainwell, on Swift, on Penny, all these guys?
Yeah, Trey Sermon reminds us that the Niners should never draft anybody named Trey, because it just hasn't worked out for them. But have a backfield.
That's the same draft too, right? Wasn't that the same draft?
Yeah, man. I ended up with some Sermon shares that year, which did not end well. They were dead. Those teams were dead so early. Very early in my life, it was too late. We have a backfield where there could be games where Swift, Penny, and Gainwell all get 8 or more touches, and the most likely player to score a rushing touchdown is still their quarterback. That's a problem. If you're not loving the ADP of the Philadelphia back you're drafting, you just shouldn't do it. Now with Penny, he's not going to catch pass. I mean, Penny might end the season with like 4 receptions. That's in play. He's not a receiver. They have better receivers on roster. What interested me about Gainwell is he kind of became their guy. They really leaned on him during the playoff run, Super Bowl. We all kind of knew they weren't going to bring back Sanders, but it showed a lot of trust in Gainwell. And I was surprised that they actually added 2 major backs to get him. I guess Sermon too, if you want to talk about him, but I envisioned maybe Gainwell being part of a 2-man committee into the season and maybe being interesting at the right ADP. Instead, it's 3-headed. I don't know what they're going to do with Hurts. I don't think it's a good business model to keep running him as aggressively as they do. I was debating this with some people online, and Rich Rebar, who I know you've had on this podcast, a really smart guy. He said, well, you know, the Bills are going to run with Josh Allen. They don't think it's that big of a deal, and it's such a cheat code. They're giving the opponent an advantage as they go away from that. Obviously, the Eagles with that great offensive line with Hurts' athletic ability, it's so dynamic to do what they do with him. But, man, does he have to get tackled all that much? Or when the Bills run a designed run with Allen when they're way ahead in the game, I go crazy. It's like, what are you doing? You have nothing to gain and everything to lose if this guy gets hurt here. Bottom line, really simple. If the room hasn't given you a giveaway ADP on a Philadelphia running back, I don't want you to take him. Gainwell's the one I would be most interested in if the discount did apply, but I need a discount. No coupon, no running back.
Yep, I think that's a great way of putting it. And that discount did really exist on Kenny Gainwell. The last, like, you were drafting early, but I'm a little concerned that it will be gone now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk quarterback draft strategy. All right, our preseason talk is gone. That's going to be gone now. Let's move into the topic of the day here on Strategy Week. It's quarterback position evolution. That is what we're calling it here. We're going to talk non-Superflex leagues. At first, we will have a Superflex conversation at the end of the show because I know the format is only growing in popularity, and we certainly want to talk about that and serve those specific players. But let's just focus on single quarterback league here first. And again, Scott, you and I have had this like conversation, the early parts of this conversation, even dating back to like last football season. But I actually wanted to give a shout out to the folks at South Harmon, no relation. It is just ironic, but SouthHarmonFF.com, who I went to their booth at the Fantasy Football Expo over the weekend, and they were showing me their Warp tool, wins over replacement player tool. It's really good. Check it out. Again, SouthHarmonFF.com. But it really helped me kind of put the point, like illustrate the point that I want to make here. And what you can do is you go and like, input your league settings and it will show you the wins over replacement offered by every player drafted in that season. And so I wanted to use the Apex Writers League for this, and talking to some of the guys in literally in the league over the weekend, right? Like JJ Zacharyson and Rich Rebar, who you just mentioned, we were joking that it's like not even useful for people that play fantasy to even like look at the results of this league because it's so skewed to wide receivers, and everybody that drafts in it, like Denny Carter and all of us, like we just draft a bunch of wide receivers. It's not applicable to your fantasy league at all. So because it's so insanely skewed to other positions, I think it really illustrates this quarterback point here very well. Again, skewed to wide receivers, PPR, start multiple wide receivers, and single quarterback. Nevertheless, Josh Allen was 13th in wins over replacement last year. Patrick Mahomes was 14th and Jalen Hurts was 16th. These guys were all worth a full win over replacement from where they were drafted last season. They're more valuable or right in the same range as guys like CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, AJ Brown, some of the best receivers in the game. Joe Burrow, who doesn't really run like those guys but is a scrambler, he was 19th. In Superflex leagues, by the way, these top three guys lap the field in wins over replacement, and they're worth a full two wins above replacement in the same range as CMC, Eckler, and Justin Jefferson. The next quarterback last year, again, in this heavy wide receiver format in wins over replacement, wasn't until 65th overall, and that was Justin Fields. So that is the biggest advantage. That's how you illustrate the advantage that those four guys gave you last year. And how does this demonstrate the evolution part of it, Scott? In 2021, just one quarterback ranked inside the top 35 in wins over replacement in this league, and it was Josh Allen. Only four inside the top 60. Allen, Brady, Mahomes, Herbert. So our kind of big point in this topic here, these guys gave you a true advantage last year, and I don't see a reason why we should project them for different types of seasons this year. And really, like, I think it is an evolution of the position, as you've mentioned when we're talking about this, with the way these guys run and the way they still produce as passers. So how do we adjust in fantasy, like our thinking about the quarterback position overall?
Fascinating stuff. And wins over replacement player, the whole idea of fantasy is how much better are you than the alternatives of your position, the marginal advantage, right? I mean, if you had a running back, Travis Kelce illustrates this, because Travis Kelce doesn't outscore everybody in fantasy. He just dominates tight ends so much in recent seasons that you're gaining a gigantic edge over your field that way, and then you're going to make it up other positions. You don't have to have the highest scoring players at other positions because you've already gotten 120 points, 150, 180 points ahead of everybody else. That's the marginal analysis of what we do. That what illustrates what the value is. And it's all format dependent, of course, and room dependent. In certain, there'll be certain attitudes in certain rooms where you have to adjust. But Matt, I can't get past the idea that, can I find somebody who's a top five quarterback who isn't drafted as a top five quarterback, or just somebody, a quote unquote elite star digit round quarterback who can outkick his ADP? I thought I was going to be heavy in on Joe Burrow before he got hurt, and maybe I'm fretting about nothing, but I just hate spending early picks on somebody who already has an injury file. That always makes me nervous. But I could at least tell myself a story. Well, what if Ja'Marr Chase rockets to the moon, right? Well, this is the year he breaks football and he's on all the magazine covers next year. And people say, hey, you know what? He actually might have been a little bit better than Justin Jefferson at LSU. That's in play. Justin Herbert, the team is getting a fresh coat of paint at the right time, a different offensive voice. They're probably going to run a lot more plays this year, which is one of those sneaky fantasy things that a lot of times you don't think about. But the Chargers could be going somewhere. You can tell yourself a story with Herbert. Lamar Jackson has gotten upgrades. You and I have talked a lot about their receivers. Obviously, Mark Andrews is a dynamite player. Jackson's got the running back board. If Fields improves even just a little bit as a passer, we know already he's a dynamic runner. Trevor Lawrence, you love the infrastructure, or I love the infrastructure. You love the ecosystem drink. If Calvin Ridley is the player he was in Atlanta or anything close to that, there's another offense that could go to the moon. So as great as Mahomes is, as great as Allen is, as great as Hurts is, and they've separated themselves, they're a tier to themselves, right? Those three guys. I'm asking myself a question. If I'm going to go priority quarterbacks, I could still, I mean, one of the mock drafts we did, I think I took Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, and I think that's actually reasonable too. Quarterback still offers a lot of paths, a lot of different ways to go. If I were to say to you, I want to look at the end of the year and say I did really well at quarterback, I was one of the quarterback bullies, I'm still wondering, can I do it with Burrow or Herbert or Jackson or Fields or Lawrence, one of those guys, maybe even Tua. If I knew Tua played a full season, man, I'd want all the Tua because he's priced like he's going to miss time. And I don't know, maybe he won't. Of course, Jalen Waddle got hurt over the weekend, which is a little bit nerve-wracking because that offense doesn't – you can't lose one of those two guys. You can't lose Waddle and you can't lose Hill, of course, because it totally changes. The Jenga puzzle falls apart. But I'm going to try, I think, in the leagues I prioritize quarterback, I think I'm going to try to get one of those A-minus, B-plus guys and hope he's an A-plus guy.
I think if you wanted the mission statement at quarterback this year, one, I've said that your entire draft, everything else will flow together based on how you attack quarterback. That remains true. Like how you decide to do the quarterback position this year is going to influence your running back core. It's going to influence your entire team more so than ever this year. But also, I think if you wanted the good news is that I'm with you, that I don't think there's a wrong way to play it this year. Like I think paying for elite quarterback can be right. I think the middle tier quarterbacks can be just fine, especially if you hit one, right? Like that goes to the moon from that tier. But I think late round quarterback is totally in play. And we'll come back to late round quarterback in a second. But like I think taking those elite guys can be perfectly fine. But the problem is you got to do it early, right? Like there's no discount available on Mahomes, on Hurts, on Allen. And I think that's, again, I think that's fine. I think that's right. And I've taken those guys in drafts, right? Like in consensus ADP right now, those guys are the 16th overall player in Patrick Mahomes, the 22nd overall player in Jalen Hurts, and the 23rd overall player in Josh Allen. And, you know, there are really good players available in that range. Tony Pollard, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Garrett Wilson, you know, Jalen Waddle, who you mentioned.
Sometimes Nick Chubb's ADP is 15 right now, which is a screaming value.
Yeah, a screaming value. See 17th he's 10th on Yahoo because Andy has him like the first or second overall.
Andy has ruined all the Nick Chubb happiness on Yahoo. But in other rooms, man, his ADP on NFFC over the last week is like 15. Man, give me all of that. I'll take that 100% every day.
But again, so you have to pass up on some really good propositions there. But there are certain times when you just look at the board and I'm like, you know what? I like Devontae Smith. I like Chris Olave. I like Ramondre Stevenson. But I would rather take Jalen Hurts there if he is available. You know, I would just rather take him. So that's why he goes ahead of those players usually. So I'm not avoiding those players. It just has to fall kind of in the right range. I think Lamar Jackson, who's the 34th overall player, belongs closer to Jalen Hurts than where he is right now near Travis Etienne and Jahmyr Gibbs. I will say, I like Lamar as a tier one quarterback. I think he belongs in the conversation with those players. I will say though, Scott, the only thing I've hesitated with quarterback, and it's a lot of the guys that you mentioned there, like Justin Fields, Justin Herbert, even Trevor Lawrence sometimes goes in that range, 55 overall for Trevor Lawrence. This is where, and it comes back to the old tenets of like late round quarterback that JJ Zacharyson wrote about all the years ago. It's the opportunity cost of those players. I'm okay with the opportunity cost at times with the elite quarterbacks, but I've rarely liked my team when I pass up some of the running backs and receivers in this range to go for a Justin Herbert, because I agree he has the top five ceiling. But a lot of things have to break right, including like he's got to scramble a little bit. He's got to scramble more than he did last year, which is certainly possible. But if some of these things don't break right for him, and certainly for even Trevor Lawrence or Fields, they're going to be fine, but they're not going to be difference makers, right? And I'm not paying for them to be difference makers, but I'm at least paying for the shot that it happens.
I will give you, dear listener, a really easy rule of thumb of should I go elite quarterback? Should I be leaving my draft after aggressively landing one of these guys, especially one of the top three or four guys, if you want to expand it, include Jackson in that group. And this is how you do it. If you feel confident that you can beat your room with a zero RB build or a hero RB build, a build that does not prioritize running back early, because either you're going to draft better with the backup knowledge and the handcuff knowledge, or you're going to run the waiver wire because, you know, again, maybe it's a casual league, maybe a lot of people check out early, whatever it is. If you're not worried about solving quarterback, then I want you to have Patrick Mahomes. I want you to have Josh Allen. I want you to have Jalen Hurts, one of those guys. Or even, you know, if you want to dip down, if you feel like Burrow or Jackson belongs in that conversation, that's fine, because you're going to fix the other positions. The more competitive my league is, the more I think, you know, I can't draft Patrick Mahomes over Garrett Wilson, or I can't draft Jalen Hurts over Nick Chubb. I just can't do that. So it comes down to me, I still think running back is the most important position in fantasy, even if you don't draft it early, because everybody has a running back take, right? Your draft just ended. And I can say to you, well, what did you do at running back? Oh, I went zero RB. What did you do at running back? I went anchor RB or hero RB. What did you do at running back? Oh, I bullied it early. You know, what did you do at running back? I took 8 million backups. You know, I tried to snipe everybody on their understudies. You know, there's a theme. There's like there's even a phrase already attached to your running back strategy. I still think your running back strategy is the most important thing you decide, even if you decide to walk away from it.
Yep, I think that's exactly right. And that's why the quarterback stuff is so important here, because it's going to influence that running back strategy. So I mentioned late round quarterback. I think that officially starts with Deshaun Watson this year at QB9, because everything else is kind of neatly clustered in the early to mid rounds there. It's like, okay, there's the elite cluster we talked about. Then there's the Burrow's kind of in a weird spot. I mean, he's pretty much right there with Lamar, but again, there's some injury discount there potentially right now, even if it's not a big deal. But like, there's the Fields cluster, the Herbert cluster, the Trevor Lawrence cluster at 45 to 55 overall. And then there's a big drop off down to 72nd overall in consensus ADP to Deshaun Watson. So again, I think that's where late round quarterback officially begins. And there are a lot of potential right answers, and that's kind of why I avoid, or not intentionally, like I'm not drafting Justin Herbert because I don't like Justin Herbert this year. Just from a structural perspective, I don't end up taking him a lot. Here's the real advantage at quarterback. If you get a player that performs like Jalen Hurts in fantasy and you get him in the late rounds, like you originally did with Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson, like back before they graduated, then you're really whooping, you know, right? Because you, especially if your early picks hit, obviously, because you did load up at wide receiver, you did load up at running back, but now you also have that difference maker at quarterback. So I guess my question to you, Scott, like, and there are a lot of guys I think that could be those difference makers. If listeners are going late round quarterback this year, which I think you and I both think is perfectly viable, who are your favorite targets? Not to sort of form the committee, like the platoon approach, which is viable, but also can be a pain. Who are the guys that could really just outkick their ceiling and potentially be like an elite producer, and you got them in the late rounds?
I will say, before I go into that, I'll say parenthetically that because you love Jacksonville's offense so much, I would have guessed that Trevor Lawrence would have been your biggest target, because right now it was quarterback 8 in ADP. I think he could easily be a top 3, top 4 quarterback. If you believe Ridley's going to be good right away, if you believe in Doug Peterson, believe in the ecosystem. So he's a really interesting guy. I'm going to have Trevor Lawrence shares for sure. So when we're looking at this group, and as you said, we're not trying to hit singles and doubles here. Where's the home run? Now, unfortunately, a lot of these guys don't run. The one guy who's going to run, I don't know when he's going to start. And I know the Colts are dysfunctional in some ways, because as long as an Ursay is on the masthead, they're going to be dysfunctional. But Anthony Richardson could run for any amount of yardage any rushing total you want to give me for Anthony Richardson per game or for the season, I'd believe it. He's that type of player. And even though I know he didn't have a great completion percentage at Florida, I know he didn't start a lot of games. I know he's one of those guys, you can easily put up a tape of his foibles and it looks like, oh my God, why did he even get drafted? And then you put up a tape of his highlights and it's like, oh my God, he should have been the first overall pick. He's that type of weird player, but at least he's got Michael Pittman. We like Steichen.
I think he's going to start week one. I think he's going to start week one. So
as much as I love me some Gardner Minshew, and actually he played pretty well over the weekend, but I think Richardson, and if he doesn't start week one, it's going to be like week two or week three. They're not waiting on that. I think most teams know that as soon as you think the quarterback isn't going to ruin his confidence and shatter it forever, just get him in there and let him learn on the job, because that's where you don't learn anything watching. You can learn a few things, but you really have to go in there and make your own mistakes. So how is the market giving you Geno Smith at anywhere from quarterback 12 to quarterback 17 or 18? I see 14 right now in consensus ADP. He was quarterback 5. Nothing has changed with DK Metcalf. Nothing has changed with Tyler Lockett. They added JSN as a first-round rookie who we'll see how much he's ready for. of course, you and I both lock it. I put him on the all boring team. He's not boring to Matt Harmon. He's not boring.
Yeah,
to
that was the perfect one though. That was perfect.
Yeah, I winked at you when I did that. You know,
I appreciate that.
Get Tyler Lockett is a perfect. If he's your third receiver on your team, I'll just look at your draft. Like, oh, rank my draft. How did I do? Here's the whole draft. Did you get Tyler Lockett? Yes. Okay, you won your draft. Congratulations. He's your wide receiver three. You did good. I don't care about the rest of your picks. I'm just gonna go have lunch. Geno Smith. Is there some pumpkin risk? Yes. Did he bounce around? Yes. Also a sneaky, useful quarterback, immaculate grid guy, because he played for a couple teams nobody remembers. I totally forget he held a clipboard for the Giants, for example. But
oh, how could you forget that one? That he broke Eli Manning's start streak. I would have said did.
There you go.
The Chargers one. People forget he played for the Chargers. He was their backup for a long time.
Don't underestimate my ability to forget things. But I did not forget. Not only was he great last year, Geno Smith outplayed Russell Wilson the previous year. You might say, so what? But maybe I should have had more Geno Smith last year. And I love these receivers. And they're not going to throw their backs a lot. And they have kind of disposable tight ends. I know every once in a while they'll throw a touchdown on their tight end. Everybody will get mad. That helps nobody. I needed that. Lockett needed that. Metcalf needed that. And Jigba needed that. Geno's not going to run that much. He's kind of a resourceful runner. He's not one of these. He's not like Rodgers or Cousins where it's like put down 85 yards right now. Maybe a touchdown. Rodgers doesn't run anymore, and Cousins never really did. He had maybe one season in Washington he ran. But I think Geno Smith showed you what is his ceiling? He was quarterback five last year. Why couldn't he be quarterback five again? Now, I look at Rodgers. This is the Tom Brady setup all over again. He's the face of the franchise. He's kind of a pain in the ass. It's time to get divorced. And when he gets divorced, he goes to – I'm not saying he's walking into the SUV that Brady walked into at Tampa Bay. It's like, oh, here's – peek at Mike Evans, peek Chris Godwin. We'll get Gronk to come back, have a ball, win a Super Bowl, throw for 1 million yards. We'll throw 700 passes a season. It's not quite that.
Antonio Brown, too.
Moments of what a strange career he had, man. Another good immaculate grid answer. Oh, yeah. You know, he played for the Patriots for one game, scored two touchdowns, and that was it.
I don't think his Raiders tenure doesn't count, though, right? Because I mean, he never actually played for the team.
Doesn't count. So that's a good point. Count. Yeah.
How can you forget that one?
Randy Moss on the Titans, you know, right? That's one of the fun things to do, just to bounce around guys that, you know, Jerry Rice of the Seahawks or Franco on the Seahawks, stuff like that. Joe Namath on the Rams if you're 1 million years old. But Rodgers is doing the Brady breakup. He's going to win the breakup. I even think like mad Rodgers is the thing. Motivated Rodgers is the thing because he's such a weird, quirky, mercurial guy. And what does he get? Again, he's not getting Godwin and Evans. But he's getting almost as good of a thing in Mike in Garrett Wilson, who was really good last year in an infrastructure that couldn't support anything and had bad quarterback play to the point that we were just, thank God Mike White's playing this week. We can play some of these guys, right? Thank God it's a Flacco game because Zach Wilson was so bad. Garrett Wilson's probably my favorite second round pick. I will be flabbergasted if Garrett Wilson isn't like, you know, 89, 1310. He's going to be a first round pick next year. And he can't do that without Aaron Rodgers coming along for the ride. Now, a lot of times what the Packers would do, no, obviously LaFleur's not calling their plays, you know, but the Packers would get leads and then they'd totally call off the dogs. And Rodgers had these games where he was great for a half and then the game would end. It's like, oh, he only had 265 and two. It's, yeah, well, they ran the ball the whole second half. He threw like eight passes after, you know, the second half kickoff or something like that. But if you're in love with Wilson like I do, and if you believe in the angry Rodgers narrative, which I know it's narrative street, I still kind of believe in it. It's going to be very similar to the Brady thing. He's going to win the breakup. Unfortunately, the Jets have a murderous schedule. We talked about the first 6 weeks. It's four Super Bowl contenders, and it's the Broncos in Denver, and it's the Patriots, a division game. And we know Belichick hates the Jets more than you hate anything in your life. But Garrett Wilson's going to the moon, and that means Aaron Rodgers is at least going up in the stars somewhere.
The only thing that I hesitate with Rodgers is that I think the scenario that you painted out with his Packers ending like is exactly how this is going to end. It's going to be this year where the Jets can get a big lead and they can just sit on it and run the ball and they have a great defense. So the great defense and the skill position group is, I mean, Garrett Wilson, we're 100% on the same page there, but it's just like, we're comparing Brady dropping into those guys we all talked about and like, yeah, Alan Lazard is fine. He's solid. Like Corey Davis is solid. You know, it's like, it's okay. So I think
Brady was having 700 pass seasons. Rodgers does not have that in his range of outcomes. Even if the Jets defense collapsed, they're not going to throw it 700 times. Can I interest you, Matt? I know it's always uncomfortable when we talk about it because Deshaun Watson's had a life and done some things and some people just won't draft him and that's your prerogative. But how poorly he played last year is a non-starter for me because nobody would have succeeded in that situation. He was set up to fail. Now he gets a full year to prepare. Cooper still playing at a high level. I know you're an Elijah Moore guy. Good offensive line. I think this is a good team. Unfortunately, they're in a division where everybody's good. So you could be a good team in this division and maybe still go 7-10. But Watson, because nobody wants to draft, and I get it. And if you don't want drafting, that's totally your choice. I just want the numbers. I don't know if I sound cold or callous when I say that, but I just want the numbers. And I'm open-minded to Watson. I think he has a decent chance to outkick his ADP.
I think so, too. I think he can finish the year and be in the same group as Justin Herbert, as Trevor Lawrence, as Justin Fields. Like, I think that is very much within the range of outcomes. This is another one where I think the truth is going to come down in the middle. He's probably never going to be as good as he was in Houston. One thing I will say is a very different offensive structure, not ecosystem, but it's a different structure. Like what Kevin Stefanski does is just, and this is should have been talked about more at the time of the trade. What he does from his and what he kind of wants from his quarterbacks, like from an offensive play calling perspective and structure perspective, is just so different than what Deshaun Watson did in Houston when it was all like shotgun and kind of like playing, you know, fast and loose, out of structure, stuff like that. So I think that still is going to take some time to blend correctly, and it might take a while this year to even get there at some point. But I do think from a pure fantasy angle that he has the ability to jump, maybe not into the elite group, but into the Justin Fields, Justin Herbert group. So he's a player I don't mind taking. But I would even say, too, that, I mean, I've talked a lot about Daniel Jones. I like Daniel Jones has top five quarterback in his range of outcomes.
For sure.
If the receivers are good, if the receiver core is improved, if Darren Waller stays healthy, and he will run. Like, obviously, Daniel Jones will run. So he has... And he's nobody, you know, his ADP would not suggest he has that ceiling. Like, I would argue that he should be ranked in a similar range as Deshaun Watson, but just from a range of outcomes perspective. And I actually kind of think he has a higher ceiling from just a pure fantasy angle.
And 707 last year on the ground, that most of that's going to stay. So all you have to tell yourself a story is that he develops one really good pass catcher, whether it's Waller, whether it's one of the young receivers there. Totally with you. And also, you mentioned about Watson coming down in the middle. Let's be fair about this. Coming down the middle is the right answer in so many things. But the tricky thing is that when you find outliers, you win. You win through outliers. So betting on an outlier is always a mistake. You should always, the aggregation, like people laugh about ADP. Aggregation actually has a great value. Wisdom of crowds is the thing. That said, you identify Randy Moss in 1998, you win every league you're in. Because, rookie receiver, and Andy was writing about this last week about how rookie receivers used to be the biggest. You get laughed out of the room if you drafted rookie receivers, other than that one Moss season. And then the great 2014 class of Evans and Watkins and Beckham. I remember a lot of people asked me Beckham questions that year. I gave them the wrong answer. I'm like, yeah, you know, you got to wait for him and rookie receivers. That's just not a great way to do business. And Beckham detonated, man. It's easy to forget how great he was at one point. He was such a comet, man. And I think he's like a Nirvana or a Sandy Koufax or one of those guys that as that gets further and further in memory, it's going to be hard to remember what he actually did. But thankfully, it's all on tape and everything. But identifying outliers is important. You have to try. I think it's a mistake to draft entirely with your hair on fire. Every one of my picks is going to be upside. I'm not playing for last, baby. I'm trying to win the league. I think you have to mix in some floor picks, and singles and doubles are totally fine in some slots. But you also have to, at some point, I think your draft has to be really, second half of your draft, maybe even earlier, maybe even the second third of your draft. What is this player's ceiling should be the first question you're asking yourself.
And I think that's a great way to end this single quarterback discussion where you want to ask like if you come down the middle on Deshaun Watson, you probably don't think he has the elite ceiling for fantasy this year, but you also don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year. But then you want to talk, if you are trying to really outkick the ceiling perspective, again, you're talking about the guys who, is their high end of the range of outcomes, like in the Herbert tier, is that Geno Smith? Like, do you want to think about him as like an arbitrage play? Or do you want to go for the guys who maybe don't have that same floor, like that same median projection? Certainly Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones don't have that, but they might have like Jalen Hurts upside if they hit from a pure fantasy perspective. They might have that upside. So that's, I think, really how you want to approach single quarterback leagues. Let's wrap this up with a little talk about Superflex, and this will allow us to sort of talk about some even later round quarterbacks that really could be interesting this year. So, Scott, just kind of give, for those who are not familiar, I think almost everybody knows, like, okay, if you've heard of Superflex, it's, you can play a quarterback in the flex. But what are some of the high-level things people need to know from a strategy perspective about Superflex and playing that format?
I love Superflex. It's basically, if you play in a Superflex league, it's really a two-quarterback league in the sense that you're going to want two quarterbacks every week. But what that super flex position holds, so you're gonna have one static quarterback. The position is quarterback. You have to play quarterback, and then you're gonna have that one flex spot where you can play anybody. You can play quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. You're gonna want to play a quarterback the way most leagues score, but if for some reason bye weeks are up against it for you, or you have a bunch of injuries, you'll at least won't take the zero. You can play somebody else. So it's a great way to make, because a lot, the big complication with two quarterback leagues, oh, we can't do it, there aren't enough quarterbacks, and people start hoarding them, and blah, 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 blah. Superflex eliminates most of that headache. So it just makes it, and also it becomes, in a lot of standard leagues, it's like the free agent wire is like, oh, here's 11 starting quarterbacks, and then nothing good at running back, and really nothing good at receiver, and like a couple of backup tight ends or guys who might, you know, end up with 350 yards. It changes that, and then the draft's more interesting in Superflex, because now people want to draft quarterbacks even earlier. And there's a priority. Here's my thing with Superflex. I want three starters. I'll only consider a two-starter format roster for me if I have gods and they have separate bye weeks. But really, I want that third starter. My general Superflex build is going to be two really solid guys. I might go something like Lawrence and Daniel Jones would be a dream for me, where I'm getting two really good players. I think they both have interesting ceilings. They could easily outkick their ADP, but I'm not paying the designer price for Lawrence, and Jones isn't going to be priced up as even a top 10 quarterback. I like something like that. A Rodgers Cousins pairing would be good for me. Geno Smith and almost anybody would be good for me. And I know people I'm in leagues with are writing this down. They're going to hold it against me. It's going to suck. But in Superflex, you have to ask yourself the question, because in a basic league, nobody cares about Kenny Pickett or Brock Purdy or Matthew Stafford anymore, sadly, or Sam Howell or Mac Jones, Ryan Tannehill, Desmond Ridder, all these guys. Standard league, those guys are on the bench. In Superflex, you're asking yourself, who could be quietly, because now anybody outside the top 20, a quarterback who can get into quarterback 11, quarterback 13, quarterback 15, that's a win in Superflex. I can't believe what I'm going to say, because I hate their receiver room. I think Mac Jones is going to surprise people this year, because they have an adult in the room. The Patricia thing is over. Bill O'Brien's a good coach. And I'm starting to think, yeah, do they have an alpha there? No. But Parker's not bad. Juju's not bad. Henry's not bad. I think they'll find something for Gesicki to do. They'll be well coached. And almost even everything that went wrong last year, they just blame it on Patricia. You blame it on Joe Judge, right? So now that it's an impetus for the team. Once you get rid of the people who are the scapegoats, now you really have to step up your game. Mac Jones, we talk about coming down the middle on stuff. Maybe Mac Jones wasn't the guy we thought he was right away, but he can't be as bad as he was last year. I think he's set up to succeed this year. If Purdy is healthy, hard to say. Man, he's got all the toys. Now, unfortunately, they're going to run the ball a lot, and they're going to have a good defense. And it's going to be, Purdy's going to be an efficiency darling. It's going to be a lot of those. We talked about those Rodgers games that can be problematic. Purdy's going to have a lot of 18 for 24 for 217 and two, you know, quarterback rating of 125 or something. It's great. And you're not going to win your fantasy game because your opponent played in a shootout and he threw for 404. You know, you're going to lose points there. But, man, all the toys. It's such a fun offense. Can Kenny Pickett take a step forward? I had a dream that Deontay Johnson scored a touchdown the first quarter of week one, and everybody ran the Twitter to tweet about it. So take that for whatever it's worth. But
touchdown regression is going to hit. I told you.
And then I told you so. Touchdown regression. He wasn't going to have zero touchdowns again. Thank you. I thought he was going to have zero again. But him, Pickens, Freiermuth, that's an interesting offense. Kenny Pickett is made for the Superflex format.
And why these guys are important, Scott, to bring it back to the wins over replacement stuff that I mentioned earlier. Number one, like I said, at that point, the guys that are at the top are like the three most valuable players in warp and wins over replacement for super flex leagues last year. Like I'm looking at one of mine, it was Pat Mahomes. It was Josh Allen. It was Jalen Hurts. And they were up there with league winning players like Justin Jefferson and Austin Eckler, who were 4 and 5. They were worth two wins over replacement, but the interesting guys there. And we knew that was going to happen, right? But the other guys that are interesting, like 14th overall, was Trevor Lawrence, who was not drafted super high last year, but was relatively late. But like, take Geno Smith at 18th overall. Justin Fields, who went pretty late at 20th overall. Kirk Cousins, 19th overall. Daniel Jones, 21st overall. Jared frickin' Goff, who was like, Mac Jones could be the Jared Goff of this year, right? Like 23rd overall if he ends up playing. Because as you said earlier, there are 32 teams in the NFL, Scott, and Mac Jones, at the consensus ADP I'm looking at, is QB 32. Behind Baker Mayfield, behind Desmond Ridder, behind guys like Sam Howell, who we're not sure are going to start all year, right? He's behind Jimmy Garoppolo at QB 26. So if you can hit on players, and I like a lot of the guys you mentioned there. Mac Jones, I think, is the spiciest one, but I have expressed my enjoyment and admiration for taking Kenny Pickett this year ahead of ADP at QB 21. Obviously, Purdy, I think a QB 22, like I kind of think Purdy at this point, now that he's going to we know he's going to play and he's going to start week one, like that mystery is over. He should be ranked ahead of Matt Stafford. He should be ranked ahead of Russell Wilson. He should be ranked ahead of Derek Carr. You know, these guys just don't have the same, you know, potential ceiling, right? If Purdy does what he did last year, Stafford, I guess, does, but it's just it's so risky. Guys like Wilson and Derek Carr don't. Even Jared Goff, like should Brock Purdy be ranked ahead of Jared Goff? So, I'm not necessarily trying to draft as my QB2 in Superflex like the Jared Goff or the Derek Carr. I'm trying to draft the next guy of that, like who could become that player. And even if, again, in a best case scenario, Mac Jones is Jared Goff, you're taking him so late, right? So that's why he's interesting in that format.
I talked about Tyler Lockett being the cheat. Did you like my draft? Oh, you got Lockett. I liked your draft. Hey, Scott, did you like my Superflex draft? I scanned your roster. Oh, you got Daniel Jones? Oh, you got Geno Smith as part of your quarterback platoon? Love it. Those are the key. Those are the skeleton keys for you.
Yep, I'm totally with you there. So, again, Superflex, I am with you, Scott. I love it. I think it's so fun, and I think it's like breathing. And we're talking, and this, again, wraps it all together, where the elite quarterbacks now are more valuable. You can't just be like, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback on planet Earth, but I'm never drafting him in fantasy because he's the first quarterback off the board, and only the idiot in your league drafts the first quarterback off the board. Even in one quarterback leagues right now, I don't think you can talk like that. Even if you believe that late round quarterback is still super, super valuable, I just don't think you can talk like that. Even the late round quarterback himself, JJ Zacharyson, you know, at late round QB, doesn't say that anymore, right? So that's the evolution of the top of the quarterback position. But so much of these guys, when you're playing in Superflex, then it introduces like, okay, yeah, it's important to figure out who the breakout quarterback is. I mean, we haven't even talked about Jordan Love, and like, well, he could be that guy, right? So I'm not necessarily a believer of that, but like, if you're a Jordan Love backer and you take him at QB 25, again, the Mac Jones thing is so perfect because he's QB 32. But like, if you take any of those guys and you hit on the breakout quarterback performance or the out of nowhere Geno Smith performance, the out of nowhere Brock Purdy performance, mm-hmm. like you've evaluated quarterback correctly. And like, that's a really big thing in Superflex. So that's why I love the format as well.
And Superflex adds layers of strategy. There's more divergence on roster building, just like a salary cap league. No more of this, oh, I can't wait to draft Justin Jefferson. What pick did I get? You pick 11th. Okay, no Justin Jefferson and no Jamar Chase and no Christian McCaffrey or whoever. You're in a salary cap draft, you can have all those guys if you want. You'll pay the price at the end of your roster, but so what? I like leagues that give me as many different builds as possible, right? I mean, would you watch like those house building shows or those house improvement shows if every build was the same? Everybody had the same Cape Cod house or whatever? No, you want to see different things, right? You go to I'm a guy who will order the same thing if it's good, but I still want a menu that has a bunch of different things I can order. And variety is what we all want, right? You want variety? Play Superflex. You want variety? Try a salary cap draft.
Well, the good news, Scott, on our menu later this week is going to be a how to master a salary cap draft, mm-hmm. and our mock draft review that we have coming up, that mock draft here in just about 25 minutes or so. So yep. That is going to do it for this episode, folks, because we have to go draft this salary cap mock draft. And again, Scott's coming back on that episode at the end of the week to talk about salary cap. We have a bunch of stuff coming up here on Strategy Week. We got how to construct a perfect roster. We've got a little big fun episode in the middle of the week that I can't tease quite yet, but listen, it's going to be a great week for the podcast, but this particular episode is over. You now know how to solve the quarterback position this year. So shout out to you again. That's going to do it for us for now. If there's a social media app, people, Yahoo Fantasy is there at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Go consume all of that content. I am at @MattHarmon_BYB. No need to consume that content, but definitely make sure you're following @Scott_Pianowski. And of course, you can watch us on YouTube at Yahoo Sports. We will be back tomorrow with another big Strategy Week topic. Until then, we're out.